Driving back, Peterson said, "You ship from KL or Hong Kong?"
"From KL."
"With what restrictions?" Ling said.
"How'd you mean?"
"Hypersonic cavitation technology in the U.S. is restricted. It can't be exported without a license."
"As I said, we use Taiwanese electronics."
"Is it as reliable as the U.S. technology?" Ling said.
"Virtually identical."
If Peterson knew his business, he would know that the U.S. had long ago lost the capacity to manufacture such advanced chipsets. The U.S. cavitation chipsets were manufactured in Taiwan. Ling said,
"Why do you ask? Are you planning to export to the U.S.?"
"No."
"Then there is no difficulty."
"What's your lead time?" Peterson said.
"We need 7 months."
"I was thinking of 5.
"It can be done. There will be a premium. For how many units?"
3, Peterson said. Ling wondered why anyone would need 3 cavitation units. No geological survey company in the world owned more than 1.
"I can fill that order," Ling said, "upon receipt of your deposit."
"You will have it wired to you tomorrow."
"And we are shipping where? Canada?"
"You will receive shipping instructions," Peterson said, "in 5 months." Directly ahead, the curved spans of the ultra-modern airport designed by Kurokawa rose into the sky. Peterson had lapsed into silence. Driving up the ramp, Ling said,
"I hope we are in time for your flight."
"What? Oh, yes, we're fine."
"You're heading back to Canada?"
"Yes." Ling pulled up at the international terminal, got out, shook Peterson's hand. Peterson shouldered his day bag. It was his only luggage. "Well," Peterson said, "I better go."
"Safe flight."
"Thank you. You too. Back to Hong Kong?"
"No,"
Ling said.
"I have to go to the factory and get them started."
"Is it nearby?"
"Yes, in Puduraya, just a few kilometers."
"All right, then." Peterson disappeared inside the terminal, giving a final wave. Ling got back in the car and drove away. But as he was heading down the ramp, he saw that Peterson had left behind his cell phone on the car seat. He pulled over to the curb, glancing back over his shoulder, but Peterson was gone. And the cell phone in his hand was lightweight, made of cheap plastic. It was one of those prepaid card phones, the disposable ones. It couldn't be Peterson's main phone. It occurred to Ling that he had a friend who might be able to trace the phone and the card inside, find out more about the purchaser. And Ling would like to know more. So he slipped the phone into his pocket and drove north to the factory. Shad Thames, Friday, May 21st, 11:04 a.m. Richard Mallory looked up from his desk and said, "Yes?" The man standing in the doorway was pale-complected, slender, and American-looking with a blonde crew cut. His manner was casual, his dress nondescript. Dirty Adidas running shoes and a faded navy sweatsuit. He looked as if he might be out for a jog and had stopped by the office for a moment. And since this was Design Quest, a hot graphic shop located on Butler's Wharf, a refurbished warehouse district below London's Tower Bridge, most of the employees in the office were casually dressed. Mallory was the exception. Since he was the boss, he wore slacks and a white shirt, and wingtip shoes that hurt his feet. But they were hip. Mallory said, "Can I help you?"
"I've come for the package," the American said.
"I'm sorry? What package?" Mallory said. "If it's a DHL pickup, the secretary has it up front."
The American looked annoyed. "Don't you think you're overdoing it?" he said.
Just give me the fucking package.
Okay, fine, Mallory said, getting up from behind the desk.
Apparently, the American felt he had been too harsh, because in a quieter tone he said,
Nice posters, and pointed to the wall behind Mallory. You do 'em?
We did, Mallory said. Our firm.
There were two posters, side by side on the wall, both stark black, with a hanging globe of the Earth in space, differing only in the tagline. One said, Save the Earth, and beneath it, It's the only home we have. The other said, Save the Earth, and beneath that, There's nowhere else to go.
Then off to one side was a framed photograph of a blonde model in a shirt. Save the Earth. And the copy line was, And look good doing it.
That was our Save the Earth campaign, Mallory said. But they didn't buy it.
Who didn't?
International Conservation Fund.
He went past the American and headed down the back stairs to the garage.
Tracksuiter followed.
Why not? They didn't like it?
No, they liked it, Mallory said. But they got Leo as a spokesman and used him instead. Campaign went to video spots.
At the bottom of the stairs, he swiped his card, and the door unlocked with a click. They stepped into the small garage beneath the building. It was dark, except for the glare of daylight from the ramp leading to the street. Mallory noticed with annoyance that a van partly blocked the ramp. They always had trouble with delivery vans parking there. He turned to the American.
You have a car?
Yes, a van, he pointed.
Oh, good, so that's yours. And somebody to help you?
No, just me. Why?
It's bloody heavy, Mallory said.
It may just be wire, but it's 500,000 feet of it. Weighs 700 pounds, mate.
I can handle it.
Mallory went to his rover and unlocked the boot. The American whistled, and the van rumbled down the ramp. It was driven by a tough-looking woman with spiked hair, dark makeup. Mallory said,
I thought you were alone.
She doesn't know anything, the American said. Forget her. She brought the van. She just drives.
Mallory popped open the boot. There were stacked white boxes marked Ethernet cable, unshielded, and printed specifications.
Let's see one, Tracksuiter said.
Mallory opened a box. Inside was a jumble of fist-sized coils of very thin wire, each in shrink-wrapped plastic.
As you see, he said, it's guide wire for anti-tank missiles.
Is it?
That's what they told me. That's why it's wrapped that way. One coil of wire for each missile.
I wouldn't know, the American said. I'm just the delivery man.
He went and opened the back of his van. Then he began to transfer the boxes, one at a time. Mallory helped.
Tracksuiter said, This guy tell you anything else?
Actually, he did, Mallory said. He said somebody bought 500 surplus Warsaw-packed rockets, called Hot Fire or Hot Wire or something. No warheads or anything, just the rocket bodies. The story is they were sold with defective guide wire.
I haven't heard that.
That's what he said. Missiles were bought in Sweden. Gothenburg, I think. Shipped out from there.
Sounds like you're worried.
I'm not worried, Mallory said.
Like you're afraid you're mixed up in something.
Not me.
Sure about that?
The American said.
Yes, of course I'm sure.
Most of the boxes were transferred to the van. Mallory started to sweat. The guy in the tracksuit seemed to be glancing at him out of the corner of his eye, openly skeptical. He said,
So, tell me, what'd he look like, this guy?
Mallory knew better than to answer that. He shrugged.
Just a guy.
American?
I don't know.
You don't know whether he was American or not?
I couldn't be sure of his accent.
Why is that? Tracksuiter said.
He might have been Canadian.
Alone?
Yeah.
Because I hear talk about some gorgeous woman. Sexy woman in high heels, tight skirt. I would have noticed a woman like that, Mallory said. You wouldn't be leaving her out? Another skeptical glance. Keeping her to yourself?
Mallory noticed a bulge on the tracksuiter's hip. Was it a gun?
It might be.
No, he was alone.
Whoever the guy was.
Yes.
You ask me, the American said. I'd be wondering why anybody needed a 500,000 feet of wire for anti-tank missiles in the first place. I mean, for what?
Mallory said.
He didn't say.
And you just said, right, mate, 500,000 feet of wire, leave it to me, with never a question?
Seems like you're asking all the questions, Mallory said, still sweating.
And I have a reason, the American said. His tone turned ominous. I gotta tell you, pal, I don't like what I'm hearing. The last of the boxes were stacked into the van. Mallory stepped back. Tracksuiter slammed the first door shut, then the second. As the second door closed, Mallory saw the driver standing there. The woman. She had been standing behind the door.
I don't like it either, she said. She was wearing fatigues, army surplus stuff, baggy trousers and high-laced boots, a bulky green jacket, heavy gloves, dark glasses.
Now, wait a minute, the American said.
Give me your cell phone, she said, holding out her hand for it. Her other hand was behind her back, as if she had a gun.
Why?
Give it to me.
Why?
I want to look at it, that's why.
There's nothing unusual.
Give it to me.
The American pulled the cell phone out of his pocket and handed it to her. Instead of taking it, she grabbed his wrist and pulled him toward her. The cell phone clattered to the ground. She brought her other hand from around her back and quickly gripped the side of his neck with her gloved hand. She held him with both hands around his neck as if she was strangling him. For a moment he was stunned, then he began to struggle.
"What the fuck are you doing?" he said. "What are you... Hey!"
He knocked her hands away and jumped back as if he had been burned.
"What was that? What did you do?"
He touched his neck. A tiny trickle of blood ran down, just a few drops. There was red on his fingertips, almost nothing.
"What did you do?" he said.
"Nothing."
She was stripping off her gloves. Mallory could see she was doing it carefully, as if something were in the glove, something she did not want to touch.
"Nothing?"
the American said.
"Nothing? Son of a bitch!"
Abruptly, he turned and began to run up the ramp toward the street outside. Calmly, she watched him go. She bent over, picked up the cell phone, and put it in her pocket. Then she turned to Mallory.
"Go back to work."
He hesitated.
"You did a good job. I never saw you. You never saw me. Now go."
Mallory turned and walked to the back stairs door. Behind him, he heard the woman slam the door as she got in the car, and when he glanced back, he saw the van racing up the ramp into the glare of the street. The van turned right and was gone. Back in his office, his assistant Elizabeth came in with a mock-up for the new ultralight computer ads for Toshiba. The shoot was tomorrow. These were the finals to go over. He shuffled through the boards quickly. Mallory had trouble concentrating. Elizabeth said,
"You don't like them?"
No, they're fine."
"You look a little pale."
My stomach."
"Ginger tea," she said. "That's best. Shall I make some?"
He nodded to get her out of the office. He looked out the window. Mallory's office had a spectacular view of the Thames and the Tower Bridge off to the left. The bridge had been repainted baby blue and white. Was that traditional or just a bad idea? But to see it always made him feel good. Secure, somehow. He walked closer to the window and stood looking at the bridge. He was thinking that when his best friend had asked if he would lend a hand in a radical environmental cause, it had sounded like something fun, a bit of secrecy, a bit of dash and daring do. He had been promised that it would not involve anything violent. Mallory had never imagined he would be frightened. But he was frightened now. His hands were shaking. He stuck them in his pockets as he stared out the window. 500 rockets, he thought. 500 rockets. What had he gotten himself into? Then, slowly, he realized that he was hearing sirens, and there were red lights flashing on the bridge railings. There had been an accident on the bridge, and judging from the number of police and rescue vehicles, it was a serious accident, one in which someone had died. He couldn't help himself. Feeling a sense of panic, he left the office, went outside to the quay, and with his heart in his throat, hurried toward the bridge. From the upper level of the red double-decker bus, the tourists were staring down, covering their mouths in horror. Mallory pushed through the crowd clustered near the front of the bus. He got close enough to see a half-dozen paramedics and police crouched around a body lying in the street. Above them stood the burly bus driver, in tears. He was saying that there was nothing he could have done. The man had stepped in front of the bus at the last moment. He must have been drunk, the driver said, because he was wobbling. It was almost as if he fell off the curb. Mallory could not see the body. The policeman blocked his view. The crowd was nearly silent, just watching. Then one of the policemen stood, holding a red passport in his hands. A German passport. Thank God, Mallory thought, feeling a flood of relief that lasted until a moment later, when one of the paramedics stepped away and Mallory saw one leg of the victim, a faded black tracksuit and a dirty Adidas running shoe, now soaked with blood. He felt a wave of nausea and turned away, pushing back through the crowd. The faces stared past him, impassive or annoyed, but nobody even glanced at him. They were all looking at the body, except for one man, dressed like an executive in a dark suit and tie. He was looking directly at Mallory. Mallory met his eyes. The man nodded slightly. Mallory made no response. He just pushed through the last of the crowd and fled, hurrying back down the stairs to his office, and realizing that somehow, in some way that he did not understand, his life had changed forever.